tonight on Arena. It's reviews this evening with Disclaimer, Sweet Pea and La Makina on TV, and new albums from Paul Heaton, The Offspring and Pádraig Jack. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. You can watch us on rte.ie/arena. In TV this week, three new series to review, one new Irish children's drama to look forward to. In Apple TV's Disclaimer, which stars Cate Blanchett and Kevin Kline, fiction gets all too close to an acclaimed journalist's real life when a new novel seems to bear a vivid likeness to that same life. Sky Atlantic's Sweet Pea is being billed as a coming of rage thriller when an introverted young woman turns killer. And Disney's La Makina brings Mexican stars Gael García Bernal and Diego Luna together as boxer La Makina and his manager Andy. Their efforts at a comeback for La Makina are mired by bigger corrupt powers. And we preview brand new children's drama on RTE. Perfect for the Halloween season, I think it's probably fair to say. The Unreal. Bored 12-year-old unleashes the Pooka when he plays an old video. Be careful of those VHS, particularly in the month of October. With me in studio this evening, Dee Malumbi and Chris Wasser. And let us start with Apple TV's Disclaimer, which comes with quite a cast and production team, it has to be said. Written and directed by 5-time Academy Award Alfonso Cuarón, stars Cate Blanchett as an acclaimed documentary maker, Catherine Ravenscroft, and I also mentioned Kevin Kline is in there, and lots of others. Big cast involved here as well. The award-winning journalist's perfect life is in danger of imploding when she is sent a novel that seems to mirror her life and terrible secrets that she has been keeping for a long time. This series is based on a novel called Disclaimer. Renee Knight, the author there. Dee Malumbi and Chris Wasser were in the studio with me. Well, if I didn't, I'm saying it now. Her life is it's based on a novel and told to us in a series of chapters. Just what is the... There are kind of three stories to start out, and it takes it a while for those stories to knit together. So maybe give it the three separate strands to it, which is the young couple off on holiday to start out with.
That's right. So we start off by being introduced to this young man named Jonathan, who's played in the show by Louis Partridge. He's on a trip around Italy with his girlfriend, and they're young and wild and free and doing all those crazy young people things that you tend to do.
Doing things in a carriage of a train that should not be seen by anybody else.
Exactly. This show is not one for the little ones. And then subsequently, we are introduced to the character of Catherine Ravenscroft, who is played by Cate Blanchett. Now, she has built a career on revealing the hidden transgressions of these mainstream institutions, kind of revealing all their misdeeds. And she is about to receive an award, basically, kind of for her career thus far. And then she receives this novel from an unknown author and is really struck and horrified by the likeness within its pages to her own life. And then the third story is quite an interesting one and a very different one. In this one, we're introduced to Kevin Kline's character, whose name is Stephen Brigstock, and he's this disillusioned, retired private school teacher. He's very much in mourning for his wife, Nancy, played by Leslie Manville. And there's something kind of dark going on with him psychologically. And by episode two, we kind of get why these three storylines are interlinked, but new questions start to arise.
Yeah, it does take it a while for the stories to, for the connections to be made, Chris.
Yeah.
But sometimes you and I would be known to be given out about things taking the time. But in this case, you kind of needed the three stories to be laid out, because they all become one story effectively. But you needed to get the three strands, didn't you?
Yeah, you and I do complain about extraordinarily long running times. But with this, you need a bit of space. And eventually it does settle. Because although those three separate story strands, although those story strands sound as though they're a little too separated, they're all heading in the same direction. Yeah. And essentially you have the Stephen Brigstock character played by Kevin Kline, his wife who is no longer around, portrayed by Leslie Manville, but we'll get flashbacks, we will actually see her. She wrote a book which actually has basis in reality, and that is what has Cate Blanchett's character in a panic.
And let us listen to the moment when Kline as Stephen tells us about the, because he finds the book, it's been hidden in a drawer and he knows not to go near it for at all, but when she's gone he has to open that drawer. Here he is talking about how he found it.
After our son died, Nancy spent most of her time locked in Jonathan's room amongst his things, dressing the place as if it were a shrine, until one day she completely moved into there, only coming out for her meals. At first she let me come inside, but one day she asked me not to come any more. All I could hear was the sound of her typewriting. Nancy had written a book in secret, and I knew that I had to read it. Even if I feared the words on those pages might actually break me.
That's Kevin Klein as the character of Stephen in Disclaimer, the first of our TV series up for review this evening. It really, even as I listened to that there, I had such a good time watching the first episode of this earlier on today, Dee. He in particular holds us into the story.
Yeah, I thought Kevin Klein, to be honest, was the scene stealer in this series. I thought he was exquisite. He's so slimy and menacing as the story does progress, but he's also so sympathetic because he is so kind of deep in his grief. We watch him as he wanders around his house like a ghost, and he's wearing his late wife's little pink cardigan, and there's something so kind of tragic about that. And yet there is a lot of darkness to this character. So for me, he was kind of the standout performance. I think Blanchett is still very good in this. I mean, she can do no wrong. And I was also pleasantly surprised, I have to say, by Sacha Baron Cohen. He was also excellent in this.
He plays
Catherine's husband in the show. And Sacha Baron Cohen, you know, you'd associate him with like Borat and The Dictator and shows like that. Movies like that. And now he's in a dramatic role.
He can do straight, and he really proves it in this, Chris. But the family dynamic between Sacha Baron Cohen and Cate Blanchett, you know that there's something really wrong in the background all the time, don't you?
It's complicated because Robert and Catherine, they have a grown-up son who, I mean, the dad never says it to him, but the mom certainly does, that he hasn't really fulfilled his potential. And you get the feeling that Cate Blanchett's character, well, she says it to him that she's quite disappointed with how he's turned out. And she has essentially kicked the son, played by Cody Smith-McPhee, out of their home to live in this tiny, filthy flat. And he's not really
getting him to be independent.
She's getting him to be independent.
He's 25.
But they have a terrible relationship. And you suspect the longer the series goes on, they have a terrible relationship because the events that are detailed in this book, which is, you know, nobody
else.
Be careful what
we give away and don't give away.
But no one else around, everyone else that reads it thinks maybe it's potentially a work of fiction. But Catherine knows that, you know, there is some truth in here. Yeah. And we suspect that the son knows things about the mother that she shouldn't. I think at its core, it's a very trashy story. One that you think maybe David E. Kelly will be drawn to, that you think even Ryan Murphy, who keeps coming up on this show, would be drawn to. But Alfonso Cuarón, for some reason, he was attracted to this project and he completely manages it. He spent the last few years on this because this is not a filmmaker that puts out a film every year or every 2 years. He takes his time and it shows. I think he manages it beautifully. He turns something, as I say, pulpy and trashy into something artful. It does require a fair amount of patience, but we're talking about watching performances by Kevin Kline, by Cate Blanchett. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, the acting is great. Let's listen to a scene between Sacha Baron Cohen as Robert and Cate Blanchett as the character called Catherine. He comes into the kitchen. We know that she's got a book and that the writer of the book is very keen that she should read it. She is burning self-same book in the kitchen.
What are you doing? Catherine! Catherine! Not that! Catherine!
It's about me.
Why are you burning this book?
Well, it was sent to me, and I think I'm being punished.
Punished?
Oh, God. Oh, God, I'm being punished.
As you said it, darling. Who is trying to punish you?
I don't know. Who would have sent that book?
Punish you in what way, darling?
Oh, God. I'm going to die.
Is someone threatening you? Catherine, why would anyone want to hurt you? Catherine?
This is something that happened years ago.
What? What happened to you?
There we go. Sacha Baron Cohen and Cate Blanchett as husband and wife in a scene from Disclaimer, new Apple TV Plus series. Interesting soundtrack to this as well, provided for us by Phineas O'Connell.
Yes.
He of Billie Eilish family fame. He's her brother.
Yeah, he's a songwriter and producer, and he's essentially kind of, you know, co-managed Billie Eilish's career. Very talented young man, and he is providing a lovely, very moody score that goes very well with the atmosphere here. I think one of the difficult things in the novel, you have a couple of different unreliable narrators, and that sort of trick is quite difficult to pull off in television, I think. But Alfonso Cuarón actually makes it look easy, because he presents each episode is presented as a chapter, but there are chapters within those chapters, and he's very good at closing off scenes in this very cartoonish, old-fashioned and sometimes melodramatic way to let you know it's not as though just one scene after another. It's letting you know we're finished with this for now into the next chapter, into the next storyteller, and that works really well for
him. He takes it so the screen kind of goes in black down into a little circle in the middle, and the chapter that section of the chapter dissolves.
Well done.
And there is the narrator Indira Varma is one of the narrators here. Does the narration work for you, Dee?
For me, I found that the voiceover narration kind of took me out of the story a bit, because I was very kind of conscious about the fact that Indira Varma was narrating the vast majority of the story, bar Stephen. Kevin Kline provided the voiceover there, so I suppose for his own character. And I was wondering if the whole idea of this is that, like, thematically, it's kind of implying that Stephen is the one who holds the power and the authorship over his life, and is he the one who's kind of, you know, manipulating the strings ultimately in everyone's story, and that's why he gets to kind of provide the voiceover narration for his own scenes, whereas in Dear Varma it's kind of implying that the other characters are, I suppose, disempowered, they're forced to go along with the events, forced to go along with the narration. So I'm not sure that if it quite worked for me, because I found it quite disruptive when I heard an actor who isn't necessarily on the screen suddenly like
narrating. Overall stars from you on this one, Dee?
I did like it. I'd give it 3.5 stars. I mean, like, Alfonso Cuarón is so talented as a filmmaker, and the quality of the filmmaking, even though it's a TV series here, is exquisite. There is something in the ending that I found quite off-putting, that obviously I can't give away for spoilers, but didn't quite sit with me right.
All right. So 3.5. What are you saying, Chris?
Yeah, I'm into it. And it's nice to see Cate Blanchett. She's actually channeling some of the character character work that we saw in Tar, another presentation with Cate, where she's playing a horrible person with terrible secrets. But yeah, I think it's beautiful to look at. I love Alfonso Cuarón's storytelling. Performances are impeccable. It's 4 stars.
4 stars from you. I loved the line, the act of keeping the act secret is almost as bad as the secret itself, which kind of explains that this slow reveal is very important within that. Okay, let us move on then to Sweet Pea. This is on Sky Atlantic, the story of an angry young woman, Rhiannon, played by Ella Purnell, based on much-loved novels of C.J. Skews, if I'm saying that name correctly. Sweet Pea follows Rhiannon from wallflower to killer as she takes out her anger on those she hates. And she certainly has a long list. I'm not going to give you all of the list of people she wants to kill. That's how she starts the entire series by naming them out for us. Let's come in at a point where she's in the workplace, as she works in a local newspaper, and she's going to start with her boss there, who is the editor of the newspaper. He's on her list.
Norman from work.
Now, I can't put that on the front page.
For failing to acknowledge my potential. Jeff from work. For having zero spatial awareness. Nice. Actually, everybody at work. People who have sex with you and then only reply to your text with emojis. My sister Saren, for leaving me on read, on my phone, and in my life in general. Our mum, for leaving and forgetting to tell us where she went. And forever at the top of my list, Julia Blenkinsop.
Did you hear Rhiannon died?
Oh, no, I didn't!
Who subjected me to a relentless campaign of psychological abuse, eroding my self-worth and general context in the world.
Oh, my God, do you smell that? It smells like decay.
There we go. That is Ella Parnell as Rhiannon in Sweet Pea, listing off the numerous people that she wants to kill. The tone is interesting here, Chris. There is a feeling of comedy off it, but it is quite dark as well.
Yeah, it's very dark. Yeah, it doesn't it isn't quite as funny as you think it's going to be, and it actually sprays an awful lot more blood at the screen than you think it will. But there is a nice little story here. I mean, as you heard, like Rhiannon, played brilliantly by Ella Parnell, who for the second time this year is kind of elevating something quite ordinary. She was the lead in Fallout, but she is she's just tired of being a wallflower. She's tired of strangers pushing by her in the street. She's tired of manspreaders on bus, as you would be. She's sick and tired of her boss not paying attention to her ideas, and she's kind of, you know, she's also quite annoyed with her dad, because her dad in the opening moments of the first episode, unfortunately, he dies, and she's kind of left alone, and he was the only one who treated her with respect. I mean, he did tell her that, you know, she needs to toughen up, she needs to kind of do something with her life, but it all goes a little bit John Wick-esque when basically the only thing that she has left after her dad is her dog, and then something might happen to the dog.
Yeah, you kind of feel that's not going to last too long.
And although she has, you know, a bone to pick with these bullies, with the guy that never texts their back, played by the brilliant John Poynting, she decides to take her anger out on a stranger. And I don't think we're spoiling anything by saying she turns into a bit of a serial killer. Yeah. And the show then goes down another route where she's working for a newspaper and she's essentially investigating the murders that she actually committed in her town.
Which it kind of reminded me a little bit of Obituary, where, you know, her name's gone out of my head. Siobhan Cullen was playing this character who becomes, who's working in the local newspaper, wants a promotion, and to do so she offers to write obituaries, but she has to keep killing people in order to have obituaries to write. There was something similar in this series, I thought, Dee.
Yeah, and I find it interesting as well that it kind of like ties into those old like cop thriller narratives, I suppose, as well, was another thing that I was thinking of anyway when I was watching it, because we also followed this character, D.I. Diana St. John, who is now taking it upon herself to investigate this mysterious series of murders in the area. She is played by Ingrid Oliver, who people might recognise from Doctor Who and The Watch. And that kind of brings about this cat and mouse element into the story, which I find to be like a lot of fun. And actually, there's a moment in the series where we're listening to D.I. Diana, her kind of inner monologue, and she's listing off the people that she'd like to kill. But obviously, she's on the other side of the law. So that was kind of an interesting dynamic, because ultimately, we find that these two characters, they're two sides of the same coin, you know?
Yeah, and I guess the workplace dynamic is quite interesting here. And the way she's treated, Rhiannon is treated, where nobody gets her name right.
No.
And the general treatment of her is, like, she really is made feel like a dog's body.
Oh, she is. Like, her boss starts every day by throwing his jacket over. She said there that her sister keeps her on red in life. When her sister comes back for the funeral, she just says, "I'm selling the family house," and that's it. And she's just on her phone the whole time.
And the girl who bullied her at school is going to be the estate agent.
Yeah, played brilliantly by Nicole Leckie. She's just so good at playing this despicable person who just hasn't changed since school. Yeah. And still making her life miserable. I think one of the strains of this series for me is that it kind of bends over backwards from episode 2 to once she starts killing these terrible, toxic, horrible men. They really are horrible characters. And you have this case where Rhiannon is going out of her way to prove that. And it never really feels as though she's just trying to prove that to herself. It's as though the show is trying to prove that to us, to say that here is a protagonist that we really want you to root for, but she's doing these horrible things. And I don't think that's a problem that the show ever fully solves. And that's getting into, like, is it a comedy? Is it a thriller?
Yeah, I thought the tone was slightly mixed in that regard.
It's a bit jumbled. But that aside, I think Ella Parnell's performance saves it.
I also really like Jeremy Swift as her boss, the newspaper editor, who will explain to us right now in the clip we're about to hear why the show has the title that is it does have. She's never called Rhiannon by anybody, and certainly not by him.
The thing is, Sweet Pea, I don't really see you in editorial.
Well, because I'm not there yet. You know, I'm over there, but I'd like to be there.
The last part I had the lens shaft or something.
And Jeff is great.
Yeah.
But as junior reporter, I could focus on engaging my demographic.
It's just you don't have the, to be, you know, you're a bit, ooh, la 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 la, ooh. You need to be So the question I would ask is, do you have that killer instinct to do that? You know, the job.
Well, maybe not now, but I can learn.
Well, you do that, and then we'll talk. Good? Was there something else?
No. Thank you.
Oh, would you put these in the recycling? On your way out.
He maybe shouldn't have done that. Might not have been the cleverest move. That is Jeremy Swift, editor of the local newspaper, where Rhiannon, played by Ella Purnell, or Sweet Pea as he calls her, that is Rhiannon, looks for a bit of a promotion. This does treat serious subjects, isolation, loneliness, bullying, they're all in there. Dee, does it work overall for you?
I thought so, yeah. Like, I do get what you guys are saying, but at the same time, I quite enjoyed the schlockiness and the pulpiness and the silliness to it. I found it to be a lot of fun and quite funny. Like, there is that bloody violence in it, but I also thought it was quite cartoonish in nature. And to be honest, it was really the character of Rhiannon I found absolutely fascinating. And Ella Purnell is fantastic in this. She's brilliant in Yellow Jackets as well, if people want to check out that show. But her character, she's so shy, she's so nervous. She's disrespected by everyone. Like, there's even a moment in a pub where like a little old lady comes up to her and even she won't give her any kind of decency or respect, and you kind of have to laugh about it. But she has kind of this mental block about being a victim. She blames Julia, her childhood bully, as kind of the source of all her unhappiness, and she doesn't really take responsibility for herself. And even when she starts to murder, she's still kind of avoiding taking responsibility. And I just find that psychological study like quite fascinating. And we watch like all the relationships around her change, her work circumstances, her life circumstances, as she kind of becomes this serial killer. And I just found that I was along for the ride.
Stars?
I would give this 3.5 out of 5 stars. It is a bit silly, but good fun.
And Chris, overall?
Yeah, I think Purnell and Poynting and Leckie, there's not a bad performance in this. I just think it has that tone issue where it just needs to pick a lane. It's a little bit wonky, but certainly watchable. So I'll give it 3 stars.
A little bit wonky, but certainly watchable. My favourite type of review. That is available on Sky Atlantic, and now that is Sweet Pea. Let's move on to series number 3, 2 Mexican stars and real life friends, Gail Garcia Bernal and Diego Luna. They star in La Maquina, streams today on Disney Plus. Bernal plays a down on his luck boxer Esteban, also known as La Maquina or The Machine, one who has just lost a major fight, but his manager and best friend Andy Lugan, played by Diego Luna, is determined to get him back to the top. I don't know if I would want that, this guy, if no matter what my job was, if I would want the Andy Lugan character played by Diego Luna anywhere near managing anything to do with me.
Yeah, Andy is a bit of a flight risk. He is, but he's such a brilliant creation. In contrast, like, I mean, Esteban, he's the prize fighter of the piece. Yeah. He's played by Bernal, and he's staring there on the barrel of 40, and he realizes that he probably should have stopped fighting a few years back, and he's not telling his doctor, his family, his ex-wife, his kids, Andy even, that he has started to show signs of a brain injury. He's hallucinating, he's hearing things, he's talking to himself. He wants to retire, he wants to embrace family life, he wants to potentially get back with his ex-wife, although a different love interest comes into at some point. He is okay with accepting the fact that he's older. Andy, on the other hand, wants to reverse the effects of time. He spends every morning Botoxing himself up to the eyeballs, he just prepares himself as though he's a younger man, and he wants Esteban to keep fighting. Now, we find out much later on why that is, but he's all about, if Esteban loses, get him a rematch, and he'll do anything for this fighter, even if it involves like buying tickets to get on flights that he has no plan of. He doesn't want to stay on the flight, he just knows that a manager is going to be there. So you've got this yin and yang partnership, but for whatever reason they do actually love one another, and that actually comes from the performances, the performers themselves, Bernal and Luna, being old friends in real life.
And this idea of the corrupt boxing world, it's all about like the poor, both the promoter, but both the manager and the boxer are pawns in the games of much bigger players.
Yeah, and La Machina does a good job of kind of looking at like what goes on behind the scenes of boxing. You know, the very first scene of it is, you know, Andy and his brother-in-law are running around trying to find Esteban his precious Frasquito drink, which he needs to have before every match. And we also go into like the marketing that goes behind La Machina's big comeback. We see this press conference between him and his opponent, Potasio, who is played by Mercedo Gesta, in which the two are kind of trash talking and, you know, squaring up to one another. And we see kind of the TV coverage in which they're debating on, is La Machina or was La Machina? Can he actually, you know, have this comeback? So I thought it was interesting to see all those elements, but at the same time, you know, it is quite kind of typical boxing drama. You have the training montages in there, of course, as well. And I thought that while it was touching on a number of interesting themes and topics, none of them were quite fully developed. For example, the character of Esteban's ex-wife Iracema, who's played by Isa Gonzalez, there's kind of this storyline where she's starting this investigation into the darker, unspoken kind of belly to the boxing world. She's looking at kind of the long-term health issues and brain damage caused when boxers end up in knockout rounds, which would have been really interesting to explore, particularly in relation to what is happening to Esteban now with hearing the voices. And yet that storyline kind of ends up being forgotten about later.
Yeah, because there is a great scene in the first episode where he goes into the doctor and the doctor wants to talk quite seriously about all of this, and I thought that was really effective. Obviously no clips because it's in Spanish. Do we get much boxing? Do we get boxing action?
A little bit. The first episode is a cracker and you do get some boxing action in the first. But after that, for instance, when Esteban realizes that some of his matches might have been fixed, he looks back at some of the old videos and you keep waiting for them to show us the fights. But it's actually better for not showing you, because it's all about, Bernal and Esteban's reaction and realizing that he might not be the hero that he thought he was, and he might not be the hero that Andy made him think that he is. The two guys, Bernal and Luna, they're childhood pals. They've known each other since they were 1 year old, and they've been the best of buds for years. They first worked together in Alfonso Cuarón, in 2001 in a coming of age drama called Y Tu Mama Tambien, which was nominated for a handful of Oscars. And they've worked together on the big screen a number of times, but this is the first time that A, they've developed something together, and B, starred in a television series. And apparently they came up with the idea for this while they were eating kebabs in Berlin. So eat more kebabs in Berlin, guys.
Off to Berlin tomorrow, would you?
Yeah, because it's a lovely idea for a show. Look, there's no way to reinvent the boxing drama, but they do it well enough. I'd like to maybe have seen a few of the pieces moved around a little bit. I actually would have liked to see a series where Isa Gonzalez maybe plays a female boxer, but that's for another day. The show that they have in front of them right now is actually solid. So I'm going to give it 3 stars.
3, and stars just from you, Dee?
3 stars. I would have liked to see Andy as the lead of the story as well. I found his story like way more interesting, but then it would have been more Scarface than Rocky.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of spray tan used as well as the Botox. Okay, that is La Machina, streaming now on Disney Plus. Before we go, just want to mention a brand new Irish kids spooky mystery series beginning on RTE1 this Sunday at 5:10. It's called The Unreal. It's the story of the Kelly family who take a trip to a holiday park in the countryside, and that leads to all sorts of tensions, of course, for mum and dad. But in the scene we're about to listen to, the family are at the dinner table. Teenage daughter Katie is glued to her phone. 12-year-old Kevin is bored.
This is cruel and unusual punishment.
I said no.
I'm calling child services. They'll take me away.
If only.
It's not fair. Why does Katie get to use her phone?
Because Katie would fall into a catatonic stupor if she was without her phone for 10 minutes. And she wasn't suspended from school for hitting someone.
I didn't even do it. Oliver O'Hara is a total liar. Everyone knows that. Why doesn't anyone believe me?
Anyway, do you really need to stare at a screen to be happy? When I was your age, there was no tablets or mobile phones.
I know. And you all sat around the piano, singing songs and knitting leg warmers, but we're not cavemen anymore.
Who's up for a little board game after dinner, hmm?
Who has not tried that with their children? That is Catherine McKiernan there as the mammy. But we also heard Kevin, played by Senan Jennings, and his sister Kate Brady, played by Kate Brady there, in a scene from The Unreal. The family holiday takes a dark twist when Kevin discovers a videotape, old school technology there, from an old 1980s show. He plays it, but by doing so, he unwittingly unleashes a strange creature called the Pooka, who wreaks havoc in the holiday park. Kevin, of course, is blamed for the resulting chaos. The Unreal starts this Sunday on RTE 1 television, 10 past 5 in the afternoon, or in the evening, is it? Yes, I think it is the evening officially at 10 past 5. One for all the family, that, and for the Halloween season that is ahead of us as well. Thanks to Dee Malumbi and Chris Wasser for our reviewing our TV highlights this week. Reminder, you can watch Disclaimer on Apple TV. Episodes 1 and 2 are streaming right now. Subsequent ones to follow. Sweet Pea, all episodes are available to stream on Sky Atlantic, and now La Machina is streaming now on Disney Plus. And that first episode of The Unreal from RTE1 is this Sunday, 10 past 5, and will also be available to stream on the RTE player. In this evening's album reviews, we have a mix of punk rock, folk and heartfelt songwriting. The American punk rock band The Offspring return with Supercharged. That's their 11th studio album. They're known for their fast-paced, hard-hitting style. Is that what we get in album number 11? Wait and hear. English singer-songwriter Paul Heaton, best known for his work with The Beautiful South and The House Martins, is back with an album called The Mighty Several, showcases Heaton's socially conscious songwriting. And Irish singer-songwriter Porrick Jack releases his second album, These Shores, a bilingual record that weaves together English and Irish, following his acclaimed debut, Making Sand. This album reflects on identity, family and heritage. Delighted to be joined in studio this evening by Kate Brennan Harding and John Marr, who have been listening, and let us start with The Offspring and a track called Light It Up. There we go, Light It Up from Supercharged, the new album from The Offspring. Kind of does what you expect, I think, and certainly in terms of that song. Is this Classic Offspring material, Kate Brennan Harding?
It's completely classic Offspring. The thing is, right, they have never really deviated too much from what that particular sound is. That Southern Californian, you know, you can put in Blink-182, you can put in Green Day. They all tend to sound the same over and over again. They have spent a number of years meandering with some sort of changes. This album is kind of interesting in that they have a new drummer called Brandon Pretzborn, and he has definitely added to the tightness and the pulsating rhythm. It, like, this is 32 minutes of an album, and it really does blow your head off in a rather shouty, loud Offspring way.
Which is grand if that's what you're looking for. But I did wonder, I found myself writing down the same song only faster, the same song only a little bit lower in pitch, the same song only whatever, slight difference. It's quite similar across.
It's 32
minutes.
Very similar. And it is just 32 minutes. So yeah, it does whiz by quite quickly. I mean, I think it's very well titled Supercharged. Everything is big about this. Everything is aimed at arenas. There's not much left to chance. I mean, it's a very commercial kind of pop punk sound, I would say. I mean, yes, they are described as a punk rock band, but I think there's a pop sensibility here. They're doing exactly what they've done during their classic era, and a lot of one's enjoyment of this album will be down to whether or not they liked Offspring back in the day. So if you did, there's a lot here to.
And yeah, certainly musically we're in the punk rock area. Lyrically, have we any sort of social conscience here, or raging against the machine going on, Kate?
Well, there is a sort of social conscience. There's more kind of like observations, but it's very basic, and it still sits perfectly in my mind as being perfect fodder for the teenage bedroom when you're just giving out because you didn't want to hoover the carpet or hoover the landing, and you've gone in and you're blasting this just to, you know, annoy your parents. So it feels exactly the same, and it reminds me of my brother doing the same thing in the 90s with The Offspring.
Okay. I mean, it's interesting. Dexter Holland, the frontman, is 58 years old.
Yeah.
But he is forever writing for the man who started this band 40 years ago. There really hasn't been much maturity. And one wonders, should a band as cartoonish as The Offspring want to go down that route? Possibly not.
Okay. I know, but it would be really nice if they did change up some little bits, because I mean there's a track you just heard Light It Up there, but the opening track Looking Out for Number One, and it goes straight into Light It Up, and I genuinely, listening to the album when it was I must have listened to it 3 or 4 times, and I was like, oh, it's not the same song.
Yeah,
I thought it was the same song,
because it is. I wonder, should I do that or make it out, just to prove the issue? No, we can't do that now. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to a track called Make It Right. So Make It All Right, in fact, the title of that track from The Offspring and the album Supercharged. And I was asking as we were listening to that, because when that happened, the opening line, I thought, oh, we're going to get a slightly different delivery here. We have that female voice, just a spoken word in the introduction. Who is that, and do we get more of her,
Rebecca,
John?
Rebecca Soykes. She's a Canadian voice actress, apparently new to me, but she does, and we get a little bit more of her in this song, but it was a welcome kind of change. I have to say, though, that I quite liked those guitars. I quite liked how the kind of how commercial that sound was. And like to strip my cynicism away, because I don't like The Offspring. I never have. And yet I kind of found myself nodding my head, tapping my foot, and kind of maybe singing along after the third listen. So it kind of did something to me.
All right.
So and I have to acknowledge that.
Yeah, but I'm very brave of you to just admit to
it is,
John.
It is. I might as well throw in my critics card and forever be banished.
We'll have to find the cure for you at some point.
Stars, John?
I'm fluctuating between 2 and 3. So let's go with 2.5.
All right. You'll be at 3 before you get home, and you'll be humming the songs. It'll only take you half an hour. You can listen to
the
car.
Exactly. Well, you'll be humming all the songs, but they'll all sound the exact same. Okay. Supercharged is exactly what it says on the tin. It is big stadium rock. For anyone that likes The Offspring, they will like it. It's mutant rock as far as I'm concerned, but it is 2 out of 5 from me.
2 out of 5. And lady is not for moving, I think, somehow or other on that
I think
one.
I'm being generous.
Yes, right. Supercharged, the title of the album from The Offspring. Let's move on to Paul Heaton, established himself as one of the most likeable and consistent songwriters in his own right, having already become a cult hero with the House Martins and the Beautiful South. Let us start with Fish and Chip Supper.
Back to our lovers, a husband or wife, holding on to fish and chips suppers and clinging on to delight. They've done it before.
And all three of us are singing different songs that we can hear in the midst of Fish and Chips Supper from Paul Heaton and his album The Mighty Several. And as John said when we were listening to that, Kate, Brennan Harding, it's really catchy, and it's, you kind of do find yourself bouncing up and down against all better judgment again.
You bounce about, but Paul Heaton has an absolute knack and genius talent for creating incredibly catchy earworms. I do think that song sounds like The Turtles, and it also sounds like Imagine Me and You. Like it's got all of that kind of sensibility going in it. But that would be my least favourite song, I think, on the album. It was the first single, and it's got a really brilliant video to go along with it. It's about, you know, heading home after a night out and getting your fish and chips and just the loveliness of contentment in your life. So I like the sentiment, and Paul Heaton is somebody that writes these fantastic songs about fantastic observations, but sometimes musically in this album I kind of, I'm not sure where he's gone with it, do you know?
Rhiann Downey features as a vocalist on several of the tracks. Who is she, and what's the connection there?
She's a young Scottish singer who really has a big part on this album. I mean, it is nominally a Paul Heaton solo album, but she appears in most of these songs. Sometimes she takes lead vocals. Their voices mesh together very nicely, I think, in parts. He, of course, had a great partnership with Jackie Abbott in The Beautiful South. I suppose his most commercial period was with her. And this has echoes of that throughout.
All right, let's have a listen to a track where I think Rhiann Downey is pretty much to the fore on this one, a track called Silly Me.
And round the waist, the first lap round the but God help the man or woman who insists that love is a thing you can bank on. Silly me, silly you, from
silly me, silly you. Silly me, the title of the track. And she can sing. And there is a real, that's Rhiann, Rhiann, what did I say?
Downey.
Second name?
Downey.
She can sing. This is part of the Paul Heaton new album, The Mighty Several. And when you hear her voice by itself, there's a touch of Beautiful South in there as well, isn't there?
Completely. I mean, Paul Heaton has recorded, obviously, with the Beautiful South. Jackie Abbott was part of that. And his last five albums have been with Jackie Abbott. In fact, they've done multiple tours. I'm sure people saw them here when they came and played at the Trinity series. So I think it's really interesting that he found this singer by going on YouTube. And all the different people that appear on the album, one he came across in a pub, his name is Danny Muldoon, and the other is a Manchester scene singer. So she goes and, you know, she's singing karaoke or she's singing kind of covers. So he found a voice and a tone that I think matches what he has been doing for years.
Yeah, and just briefly, John, you were saying as we were listening there too, he's all into dynamic pricing. He's kind of railing against the current trends.
Absolutely. I mean, he's doing a tour at the moment. It's £35 in Britain to go and see him, which is compared to pretty much any act today, that is completely laudable. Like in an era where Oasis are charging €415 to stand in the middle of Croke Park, you have to doff your hat
to this
man.
Have to wonder too about where that dynamic pricing and the ticket people who are in charge of selling the tickets is all part of what he's railing against. But let us give reviews for his album rather than what he's doing for the music industry. Stars on the album, John.
I really liked this. Like I know I might be again the only one here in the room. I think he has a great sense of whimsy in his songwriting, and that's very much the case here. I was struck by the fact that there were so many earworms here. I think Rhiannon Downey is a really interesting singer.
Really liked her.
So, 4 stars from me. 4.
Ooh, that's high, Kate.
Okay, so I am a big fan of Paul Heaton, and there are certainly numbers of songs on this album, like National Treasure is gorgeous, Silly Me, Small Boats is okay, but I found that the album didn't figure out its identity. It did feel like I was meandering through a pub band who should have taken a break maybe 20 minutes earlier. It's 2.5 out of 5 for me.
Oh, that's terribly harsh. That is very harsh.
Okay, we have one more to go. Let's see where we get with that after these. Aran Islands artist Padraic Jack is a bilingual singer and songwriter. These Shores is his second album, and it is the third that we have up for review this evening. Let's listen to the opening and title track from These Shores.
Shores, a Celtic soul has grown, a culture of our own that has strewn the fire to our lords. We have stood up and we have repelled. We have toiled and we have rebelled with our own soil beneath us. The tributes paid on this sacred sod that was cultivated in the name of God, of pagan hands, this Gaelic land be bestowed upon us. Harvest sport.
And that's The Shores, a title and opening track from Padraic Jack's second album. His first album, John, was Making Sand. I think was it more directed at the folk area of music? Yeah, although you can hear the folk.
Oh, you can certainly hear
in
folk
there
in
for sure.
As well, but I think it was much more conventionally folk, and that's largely the kind of audience that has followed him. He's from Inishmore in the Aran Islands. That album kind of didn't have a significant impact. It got relatively well received at the time. But he has some interesting people working with him here, including John Reynolds, best known for his work with Sinead O'Connor. And there's a real mix of of music here, kind of conventional singer-songwriter stuff, folk stuff, even the odd bit of Shannos in terms of the way he the way he sings.
And there's a country feel in the album at times too, Kate.
There is a country feel. There's also kind of an ode, I think, to, like, he has spoken about his mother's love of Van Morrison, and he's been given that, and you can hear a bit of that, and what's called Jimmy McCarthy as well, and James Taylor. So it's kind of, while I was talking about the Heaton album, saying that that was kind of all over the place, this one is brought together quite cohesively. And I think, you know, there's themes of him sort of looking at things that bring him joy or spark joy, and looking at the heritage of our country, and looking at, I think, trying to be optimistic when maybe he might be feeling lonely or isolated.
Yeah, and there's an absolute sense of sincerity across all the songwriting. I don't think he's capable of telling lies, Padraig Jack.
For sure, there's a song, What Is Love? I think it's one of the better songs on the album. And a lyric, powerful lyric: there's nothing that can't be done if you're happy inside. Rejection ain't no fun, it can shatter your life. I mean, he really is laying himself bare on some of these songs, as he did on the previous album.
He's really interesting as well, in that he was he gave up his career as a science lecturer engineer to follow his career, to follow basically music. And he's obviously doing that, you know, from that sincere place of, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make something I love.
And it is a bilingual album, a couple of songs, Oscailige, in there as well. Ihyal, Jailtuk O'Hifrin. How does that sit within the overall shape of the album, Kate?
I think it marries incredibly well, because you can hear that he is completely bilingual, and that he floats, we float through the languages. And when he's speaking Irish, I'm not an Irish speaker, but the sound kind of conveys what I think he's trying to say. I have to go and look up what it means, which is terrible. I should be able to speak.
It's worth pointing out that his father, Barry Ronan, in 1983 released an album called Traw, which was a synth pop album with lyrics Oscailge, and it was produced by Nicky Ryan, who went on to have a lot of fame and success with Enya. So there is kind of previous in the family.
Is this album about trying to move Padraig Jack into a more mainstream type of area? Because there's a touch of Sean Keane. You mentioned this, Kate. Sorry, I shouldn't have stolen your thunder, but I think it's a good comparison.
Yeah. So the thing is, what I like about it is the tone of his voice. And when I was listening, I felt that there was obviously Sean sort of sings more through his nose and can have that Sean Nose thing. But there's something about Padraig James where he has that tone to his voice as well. And I do think there are some songs on the album that are incredibly radio friendly. And I say that as a radio producer, as somebody that looks at this kind of thing and thinks that, well, artists do have to consider that. And some of the darker songs on the album that wouldn't necessarily be immediately put onto radio play are the ones that fascinated me more. They were the ones that
were funny enough
interested.
That What Is Love was the one that I felt had the darkest kind of musical sound to it, even though it's a very positive message. Stars overall from you on this one, Kate?
I think it's a really well produced album. I think it's a gentle meander through the observations of Padraig James, and a nice introduction to anybody, because I think a lot of people won't know who he is. I'm giving it 3 out of 5.
And what are you saying, John?
I think it's a solid album. There's some good tracks here. 3 stars.
3 from both of you then for these shows from Padraig Jack. And previously we spoke about The Mighty Several from Paul Heaton, and Supercharged from The Offspring. Kate Brennan-Harding and John Marr are reviewers on this Friday evening. That is our lot for tonight and for this week. Leah Murphy researched, Dolly Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator, Mark Dwyer was on sound, and tonight's programme was produced by Pauline McNamara. Back with you Monday, 7 o'clock here on RTE Radio 1. John Creedon will be with you after the news.